line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Fresh edition of the Lombardi Line as we welcome you in Thursday from downtown Las Vegas and our Circa Sportsbook studio. Thursday is our Hall of Fame game. We are a day away as Michael Lombardi is with me. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy rest of the week. Great guest list as well today. Michael, excited to talk some Houston Texans with you in a little bit as we're going to get into it with John McClain, who is the HoustonTexans.com writer. Almost five decades fully for John McClain covering the Texans in the NFL. Brad Biggs as well from the Chicago Bears joins us coming up 1:45 Eastern, and then Adam Burke in studio today as we are a day away as well from the College Football Betting Guide being released. Adam coming up at 2:30 Eastern. So with that, Michael, final day of July. We're almost here. Preseason football a day away, and one team with some big news with DJ Moore's extension. That is where we will start today with the four-year, $110 million extension for DJ Moore. Highest extension in Bears history, and a very, very big deal here for Chicago. Even though we will not see any of the starters nor quarterback Caleb Williams play in tomorrow's Hall of Fame game, that is a big deal. Moore averaging $27.5 million across his four new years, which would be seventh among wide receivers currently, and that total value fifth if you extrapolate it among current wide receivers overall. So as we welcome in Michael for today, excited, a big show today here, Michael. We're almost 24 hours out from the Hall of Fame game. The Moore piece is where we'll start with that extension and a very significant development, at least to lock in a guy who had a career year a season ago there for Chicago and now who has a whole lot of weapons around him.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Bears, they're almost playing fantasy football in terms of the money they're committed to their wide receiver group. The Keenan Allen, they redo his deal. They go ahead and pay for, they draft Adunze, the eighth pick overall in a prohibitive area. And then, of course, they give DJ Moore an extension and pay him a ton more money. So for me, this is they better hope they can protect. Because for all the weapons they have, and they signed Swift this offseason, for all the weapons they have, I'm not sure that the protection's going to be good enough. It wasn't last year, and they had a mobile quarterback who led their team in rushing. So I just think it's going to be it's good that they got all these guys signed, but clearly Ryan Poles, their general manager, he values these receivers and doesn't value the defensive front. I mean, look, they have one really good defensive lineman in Sweat. I'm not sure that they have anything other, and they're going to have to rely on their scheme to get some pressure.
It's a situation, too, where I always wonder when you go into a team like Chicago that is so heavily hyped, right, into a season like this, you just compare some of the positional grades in the rankings going back from last year. It was clearly a bottom half of the league offensive line. Clearly wide receiver was league average at best, if you wanted to be generous. That was with Moore, and Moore fulfilled his end of the bargain. Well, now this year, most websites, you look across, very respected publications, they've got Chicago. This is a top five wide receiver unit across the board. This is a top 12 offensive line unit across the board. I always have some hesitation with that, where it's like, is that just a result of all the hype coming in, or is that actually real? Granted, a lot of moves made on the wide receiver front in general. When you bring in a Keenan Allen, you extend DJ Moore, you assess Roma Dunze and deem he's worthy of a top 10 pick. But that's the question to me, Michael. Is it worthy now to say this is a legit top five unit? And is also the offensive line now a group that we feel confident in helping out Caleb Williams, who really struggled? We saw what happened when he struggled getting protection in front of him at USC his last year.
Well, plus I think they're committed, Ben, to 11 personnel, right? I mean, Cole Kmet's a good player, so they're going to have to keep him on the field. And then you're not going to sit Keenan Allen down, and Adunze, you draft him as high. And, of course, you've got the DJ Moore, who you just paid. And, I don't know how their offensive line moved up in any rankings whatsoever. I mean, the signing of Ryan Bates with a trade from Buffalo, that's really impacted your line. I mean, the Nate Davis from Tennessee, who wasn't good enough to play for the Titans offensive line, you have him. I mean, I don't get how could they move up when they really didn't add any new players in their offensive line? And then the defensive front, they did nothing to really improve their defensive front. They signed Marcus Walker from Tennessee, other than that.
And that's why the Hall of Fame game, too, it gives us the opportunity to talk both Houston and Chicago, because you can make an argument both are very built in a similar fashion as far as preseason expectations. Now, granted, one team actually was very, very good last year, made the playoffs, while one team ended very good after basically being out of it and really being in that spoiler role for the back half of the year. That's why I'm excited to get into your burning questions today, both on the Texans and on the Bears. The other question, too, will be now, what do we see actually, that is actually questionable in the Hall of Fame game, where we already know the Bears, none of the starters will go. As we were talking about it yesterday, Michael, that was when a big line move happened. While the game is a little more than 24 hours out, we saw a flip of favorites here. Texans now laying 1.5. Total continues to come down. That moved about a point to the under yesterday on the Caleb Williams news, and this news of no starters going there for Chicago, down to 31.5. And based on the quarterback experience, even in the backup side of it for Houston, it does make sense now that they would flip to the slightest of favorites there for our first game of the year tomorrow.
Well, I mean, look, let's face it. We talk about the quarterback, but the problem is when we're talking about the Bears not having a great offensive line, how can we rely on the backups of that offensive line? And so now when, you know, Tyson Badgett comes in the game with the backup offensive line with the twos and threes and then with the backup receivers, it's hard to move the football. You know, there's not enough time. There's not enough execution. There's not enough really experience to understand how to do it. Meanwhile, you know, Houston has experienced quarterbacks, but the depth of their offensive line and how they look at receiver, it's going to be interesting to see, because, you know, what you do in this Hall of Fame game is you probably don't play anybody in this game that you know has made your team, where the guys are going to play in this game, they're fighting for roster spots.
That's what makes the Hall of Fame game. We are not, I think the casual fan is going to go, all right, this is a snooze fest after about 5 minutes. But for us, you know, the ones who really want to see the deep dive roster battles that are going on, this actually will be very important going forward for teams that have, yes, as you're talking about, Mike, a lot of questions as far as depth perspective.
No question. And that's the best way to find it, right? I mean, you got to let some of these young players play, and you have to let them, you know, in a game situation where it is, they don't know whether it's run or pass. You know, they don't know whether, you know, this is going to be, we can touch the quarterback. This is really, you find out about the instincts of the players and how they handle it.
It is the game that will kick off the preseason tomorrow. We'll talk to John McClain first up here in about 25 minutes, who is it's almost five decades covering the NFL. Great to have John back as always. It'll be really nice to check in with him, and then Bragg Biggs coming up after that. That'll be our Houston and Chicago focus for today. The next wave, though, Michael, as far as the Moore extension, we kind of wonder, all right, who's next? Because we've had a number of these offseason extensions. Now it's CeeDee Lamb. Guys like that, hey, he's on the clock. Ja'Marr Chase, Tyreek Hill, Brandon Ayuk, who's been the one guy everybody's been talking about all offseason. Of those four, Michael, who's most likely in your mind to go next year and get their deal done as we get into camp?
Well, the DJ Moore deal helps the teams, right? It's 27.5, right? It didn't go anywhere near the 30 million mark. It didn't go anywhere near some of these. So to me, if you're in the Lamb category, you know, you want Jefferson's deal, and I'm sure that's what he thinks he should get. You know, Ayuk's going to want that the same way, too. He doesn't have as much production as the other guys. But my sense of listening to people around the league, it sounds like Lamb's close. I don't know if that's 100% accurate, but it sounds like they're making progress towards getting a deal. I don't know if they're making progress in San Francisco on Ayuk. They've kind of gone underground on that one. But I think at some point, the San Francisco has to make a decision. You know, what are we doing here? You know, either you're playing for the tender or we're not going to have a contract. The one thing about negotiations, if you don't put a deadline on negotiations, you have no chance to get anything done.
And I wonder on the Lamb part of it, because we just talked yesterday, Ja'Marr Chase, the comments from Mike Brown in Cincinnati, he's not in any rush. He's going to do his due diligence and do what Cincinnati has always done, which is take their time, not necessarily bend the knee in any way. Brandon Ayuk in a similar boat, where we have seen time and again what John Lynch and San Francisco's strategy has been, which is we are totally fine waiting. We are not in any rush to get this thing done. So you just wonder on the Lamb piece of between, you know, Lamb and Hill, those two would definitely make sense, right, as guys you would want to get. And I also wonder if for Jerry Jones, you kind of mentioned how it is sort of a nice piece for these team owners and GMs to sit there and go, all right, yep, 27.5. And there was already this pressure bubbling up here on Jones, who hadn't really signed anybody. It had been a very lackluster start of camp for the Cowboys, and maybe this gives a little leverage here on that front, where you know they have to get the deal done, but it's now you aren't going to have to give as much money as you might have thought in the past.
Well, yeah, I mean, and look, there's no momentum in coming out of Dallas whatsoever. I mean, have you seen the crowds? I mean, there's nobody at the Cowboys practices, and usually they're always crowded. You know, and I think that's kind of I think that's a reflection of there's just not a lot of momentum on this team.
I get it. Yeah. And I mean, Dallas, it's funny in an NFC East where, I mean, what have we heard all offseason? It's been all Philly. It's like It's like the, you know, any friction between Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts, it's like nobody remembers that at all. It's all just how bad did the Cowboys choke in the postseason last year. Now, that's not to say I don't think Philadelphia isn't deserving of being the favorite to me. They're clearly the best team in that division going into the year, but it's where perception comes into play, at least this time of year. And I do wonder if Dallas, because of, you know, the general media narrative on them, if they aren't actually just an undervalued team coming into the year. When you think about the weakness, the rebuild of the Giants, the Commanders, which to me are two of the bottom five teams in the league entering 2024, if Dallas isn't, you know, in a good position, even though Philadelphia is clearly slightly above them power ratings-wise starting this year.
No question. I mean, and there's so many questions for Dallas. And a lot of it is style of play, too, with Dallas. They were so good last year at getting the lead. They were so good at playing from in front that teams really couldn't get a chance to run the football on them. And if that doesn't, if they don't have that explosive offense like they did last year, where they're in these tight games, people will run the football. They've done nothing to improve their run defense or their front.
It is a Dallas team sitting second in that division, 10.5 on the win total right now. A lot for us to talk about today. We'll dive in more on the NFL stuff. And it'll be great, Michael, because we'll go off the air today, get some USA men's basketball. You get to watch, see how many minutes Joel Embiid can stay on the floor for today. All I know is Sharps in on South Sudan today, Michael, about a 3-point line move down to 28-point underdogs against the USA. Can't wait for that as we wrap up the show. Michael's not wanting to give in.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were going to break there. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to seeing my man Embiid there.
I know you are.
But look, let's be honest. I think America sees that he's not on the same level that some of these other guys are.
We'll talk that more later on. But up next, it is some burning questions. We'll go to the Houston Texans right after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Tormented by the transfer portal, coaching carousel got you confused? Let our 2024 VSiN College Football Guide get you ready for the upcoming season. This year's College Football Betting Guide comes out tomorrow, and it includes season win total picks and previews for all 134 FBS teams, plus feature articles on how to create a power ratings model, calculate home field advantage, and who to bet on for the Heisman. You can get Matt Heumann's preseason top 25, Steve Mackinnon's top betting systems, and what you need to know to be ready for kickoff. The College Football Betting Guide comes out tomorrow and is one of many benefits to becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. So sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. And we are thrilled in our second hour of the show coming up 2:30 Eastern to have Adam Burke, who is really a man responsible for the betting guide, not only the NFL guide, but also the College Football Guide. Adam and I are hosting the College Football Guide release special, which will air tomorrow right before Lombardi Line, Michael. So pumped to have Adam. And I know you got some teams you want to pitch, throw out at Adam for some thoughts on, because we've done the deep dive.
I've been doing some deep dive onto some of these teams. It's interesting. I've been going through the Southeast Conference, and, you know, I think people are sleeping on Milroe. I really do.
15-1 to win the Heisman.
Yeah, I think, to me, if you believe in Caden DeBoer, what he's been able to do with quarterbacks, I think there's something there. And two, I think if you just judge the player on how he performed through the year last year, from the Texas game where he wouldn't throw the ball on the move to the end of the year where he was throwing the ball, making plays with his arm and his feet, I think he's got a huge upside. I really do. He's a big man. He can run with the football. He's got a great arm. So I just think, to me, if the system is in tune, which I believe it is, will be with Caden DeBoer, I think he has a chance to really shine.
It is an Alabama team that, yes, is in a very, very new situation, but not getting any sort of buzz, at least based on what you would expect for Alabama in 2024. I know there's at least one person in the guide who has advocated for a Milroe Heisman bet. Not a bad bet to make whatsoever, considering the open-seeming nature of that Heisman Award this year. Alabama not getting any buzz, but you know who is, Michael? The Houston Texans coming into 2024.
Yes.
That's where we'll start. Burning questions for you today, and I'm glad that really two of your questions that you wanted to dive into deep here on the Texans revolve around the defense, which ended up finishing 2023 20th in pass defense on an EPA per play basis. I had the fortune of getting a lot of weak quarterbacks down the home stretch, and I took advantage in their playoff win of getting the Joe Flacco-led Cleveland Browns as well, who finally cratered after outperforming expectations down the home stretch of the season. That's the big ask now for Houston in a division with a lot of high-powered offenses in the AFC South. What can we expect from a secondary that left a lot to be desired last year, even though the team overexceeded by wide, wide margins all those preseason expectations.
Well, look, let's we all talk schedule, right? And we all talk about, you know, what they were able to do. When they held teams to under 20 points last year, they were 9-1. When they didn't, they were 2-7. Okay, so, but when you break down what, everybody talks what schedule, who's on the schedule. Who's the quarterbacks you're beating? They beat Flacco, Minshew, Trevor Lawrence once, Will Levis, Bryce Young, Derek Carr, Kenny Pickett, Zach Wilson, Kyler Murray, and Desmond Ridder. I mean, that's really, it wasn't a who's who of quarterbacks. And for a team that struggled to stop the pass, they could play the run effectively, but to stop the pass was a real problem. But what's really interesting about stopping the pass is they only allowed 10.6 incompletions per game, okay? And only Carolina and Arizona was worse. I mean, think about that. Only 10 incompletions per game. That's a zone team. There's a lot of completions. And when you have a quarterback who's really good at completing passes, you know, you're going to get a lot of yards doing that. But play Minshew or Levis, who are not good at completing a lot of throws, all of a sudden it shows up. I think that's something that they have to correct. The other thing they got to correct, Ben, is they were 31st in penalties called on the team. Yeah. Almost 7 penalties per game last year. They were 28th in yards allowed in penalties and the 14th in first down by penalty.
It's a young team, and even with that, there were some guys that they counted on, some of the few vets to help shore up what was a roster we viewed would have lots of growing pains. And then Steven Nelson retires. Jimmy Ward, a guy who was so good playing under D'Amico Ryans in San Francisco, but I don't know how you viewed it, Michael, watching the tape. Clearly looked like he lost a step last year, was not nearly the dynamic sideline-to-sideline player that he used to be.
Yeah, no question. And I think a lot of that is, you know, they brought him in there because he knew the defense, right? And that's so important. But this defense is all predicated on turning the ball over. The other thing I think that hurt their team last year, Ben, is because they couldn't run the ball, they couldn't reduce the game, right? They couldn't reduce the game. I mean, last year they were 21st in the league in rushing attempts per game. For a team that relies so much on play action pass, you would have thought, well, this is a team like San Francisco that's going to be able to run the ball. No, no, no. They were 31st in rushing first downs per game. They were 31st in rushing yards per percentage of their offense. This was a passing team. A complete passing team. And so as you study them in the offseason, all those play action passes are really just passes because they were never really going to run the ball. They couldn't run the ball. That's, and so because they couldn't run the ball, the defense played almost as many plays as the offense, which is a real issue.
Now you flip it forward too. While we have the secondary questions on one side of the ball, where Houston, when they failed to generate front seven pressure last year, allowed almost 8 yards per attempt, which was bottom six in the league. Now you go to the offensive line especially, which leads right into what you're talking about, Michael, and the ability to have a much more diversified offense under OC Bobby Slowick. I mean, this O-line was just a walking dead unit last year. I mean, bruised, battered from really the first week of the year. They were never healthy. Laremy Tunsil still there on the left side of the line. Shaq Mason is a pretty reliable guard on the interior. But you just wonder, okay, A, where's the durability coming from? And B, who else are you really trusting in to fortify the rest of that line? I still can't sit here and really feel confident in saying, oh yeah, Houston, top half of the league offensive line. I have to be proven on it. And it's probably why I lost a lot of money betting against them, at least in that early part of the year last year, because I just thought they've got nobody on the O-line. And I thought they were pretty fortunate to get away with it until they eventually got some of those guys back later in the year.
Well, I mean, look, Titus Howard's been hurt most of the time. Shaq Mason has been a cap casualty for two teams, the Patriots and the Bucs. Kind of went there. They've redone his contract. Kenyon Green, the first-round pick from A&M, he's yet to really be the guy. And Tunsil, I'm sure he's going to want to raise after all these guys get their contracts done. So you're right. And look, when Dalton Schultz is your main tight end, it's hard to run the football behind him. Right. It's hard to. And last year they had no juice at running back. I mean, Damian Pierce, I don't know what happened to him. He was good as a rookie, averaged under 3 yards a carry. Now they signed Joe Mixon. Look, one thing watching Cincinnati last year, I thought Joe Mixon had no juice left in his lower body. I know the media wants to make him out to be the same player he once was. That's not the case at all. I think to me, he's got to prove that he still has explosiveness in how he plays the game, which he didn't really show there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think, look, they've got to figure out a way to run the football more effectively because people have studied them and they're going to put more pressure on them and they're going to put more pressure on Stroud.
In addition to that, you also, and this also is a very kind of quasi-similar point to the offensive, the production they had, which was so much predicated on the deep ball, but also the fact that Houston got a lot of help on the special teams last year. Your final burning question for Houston, a team that was second in non-offensive touchdowns last year. Not one of those stats you want to just count on happening year over year. Still a really good unit, but that is a valid question to ask for a team that is looking to find production from more ways, especially on offense.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I mean, they were able to, their kicking game was very good last year in terms of coveraging, making plays. And I think as we talk about, as the schedule heats up, right, as you have to play against better teams, especially in passing, you know, where you have to play against teams that can really throw the football, you know, and then I think to me that becomes the issue. Houston, 10.6 incompletions per game. The number one team in the league last year was Baltimore. They allowed 14.4 incompletions per game. That's the number you've got to get to. I mean, the last three games for Baltimore, they only averaged 8 incomplete passes.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, think about that. I mean, you know. And so it's really remarkable. And so, and the last three games for Houston, you know, 9.7. Think about that. I mean, so they've got to figure out a way to get better in that area.
You also go now from the fourth place to first place, and that has a big impact on scheduling. Sixth hardest schedule by opposing win totals in the league. When I look at the power ratings as a result of all that, Houston, I have about, I've updated my numbers here, I have about a point better than Jacksonville heading into the year, about 3.5 points better than Indianapolis. Is that really worth making Houston a plus 105 or even money favorite to win the division when you have Jacksonville and Indy sitting there around plus 275 to 3-1? No way. It's just a matter of hype, and we're getting, I believe, Mike, a little bit out in front of our skates on Houston, where we just saw what happened with Jacksonville going from worst to first last year, how they struggled to duplicate success in that same role. That's why, for me, as much as I like Houston, I still believe they're the best team to start the year in the division. The gap is way more narrow than what these odds would indicate.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think they're going to have to play a better rounded game against better quarterbacks. And it's going to be week in and week out, it's going to be harder. And they're catching no one by surprise. I mean, Bobby Slowick's going to have to change what he does because people have spent from February 1st up until they play him on studying what he does, how he calls the game, how he wants to throw it. You know, and if they can't run it with the outside zone the way they do with Kyle Shanahan, all of a sudden, people are going to say, you know, forget about playing the run here. Let's just get after him.
No doubt. Well, can't wait to get John McClain's take on this. Longtime beat reporter for the Texans. He will join us next to talk more Houston when we come back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is the Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line into our final half hour with Michael. I'm Ben in for Stormy, and what a treat we have here. Look who's here, Michael. It's Adam Burke, college football betting guide set to come out tomorrow. Adam, our senior managing editor at VSiN.com. Or is that, do I always mix it up? Is that the correct
managing editor, senior, whatever you want to call me.
I like senior.
Whatever you want to call me. I feel like I've been called much worse, so whatever you want to call me is fine by me.
Man of many talents, Adam Burke. You and I are going to host the College Football Betting Guide release special tomorrow. We're so excited, Michael. We're just going to stay up all night. We're going to record in these same exact suits tomorrow morning. I'm really excited for it. Guide is out, and you're kind of comparing the two here, Adam. I mean, look, NFL Guide, like, we know it's 32 teams. It's a deep dive into each one. There's a lot of really good actionable info. College, though, when it comes to actually preparing for a season, I mean, the prep you have to do is just out of this world compared to the NFL, as much as we're an NFL show here. I mean, college, it's like night and day, right, as far as your prep goes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing about at the NFL, and you guys know this as well as anybody, like, anytime a free agent gets signed, there's some kind of headline somewhere, right? Whether it's on the team website, whether it's big enough to get, you know, national media coverage, stuff like that. That's not the case with college football. Certainly when you get a big-time, high-profile transfer, that's something that's going to get some run, get some headlines, stuff like that. But you know, a lot of times, a lot of offensive line upgrades, defensive line upgrades, secondary upgrades, stuff like that, those aren't things that are going to get headlines. Those aren't things that people are going to be aware of and know about. So that's one of the primary functions of this guide. We preview all 134 FBS teams, Kennesaw State being the new one this year, and we talk about some transfer portal additions. We talk about returning production. We talk about all the coaching and coordinator changes as well. And the nice thing, I think, about our guide is We don't have to keep lines of communication open with coaches or SIDs or athletic departments. We can give honest, unbiased assessments of these teams from a betting-focused standpoint, and I think that is one of the most valuable elements of our guide, which, again, comes out tomorrow for VSiN Pro subscribers at VSiN.com.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're so right. It's so hard to – and I've been going through the Southeast Conference every morning with a bunch of friends around the league, and we've been – you know, and sometimes, like today, we got to – you know, we got to one of the schools, Auburn, and one of the guys is not there, but he is somewhere else, and who transfers in and who doesn't. The guide kind of helps you handle all that stuff and then look at the quarterbacks. I want to ask you, I made this statement earlier in the show, Adam. I think Milroe is better than people are giving him credit for right now. I think Milroe, with understanding the DeBoer offense, could be really good.
Yeah, first of all, I really like Kalen DeBoer. I think Kalen DeBoer is a top five head coach in college football. And when you look at what he's done with quarterbacks throughout his career, and even if you go all the way back to when he was the offensive coordinator at Eastern Michigan in the mid-2010s, Brogan Roback became a really, really good quarterback for the Eagles. He's the second leading passer all time in that program. That was Kalen DeBoer. And then, of course, Michael Penix at two different stops, both Indiana and Washington, turns him into a top half of the first round draft pick. And of course, a guy who played really, really well for the Huskies, took them, you know, all the way to the national championship game. And that's just something that Kalen DeBoer does with his quarterbacks. And now he's got the most talented quarterback he's ever had in Jalen Milroe. So I think that Alabama's in a really, really good spot. Also, I love their defensive coordinator, Kane Womack, although I think it's a little bit crazy, Ben. I don't know if you saw this on social media today. Alabama at practice, of course, it's hot and humid in Alabama.
I've heard.
Kane Womack running around in a hoodie. So, jeez. A complete football guy, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, I think Alabama is going to be really, really good this season. And, you know, they're a team that I'm entertaining thoughts of taking them at 14 or 15 to 1 to win it all this year.
And if you are thinking of that very thought, Adam, you're probably interested too, as Michael pointed out, Jalen Milroe to win the Heisman in that same 15 to 1 range, as Adam Burke is with us here in studio at Skating Tripods. Part of the big reason why the College Football Guide is out now, a huge reason.
Tomorrow.
Out tomorrow. Basically, yeah. We might have gotten a sneak
peek. We have a proof,
peek.
And I will tell you, it is 212 pages long.
That's a lot.
So there's a lot of editing to do here. Again, 134 FBS teams, team per page, kind of adds up a little bit. There's a lot of editing going on here behind the scenes, but we will be ready to have that guide out to you first thing tomorrow morning. So we're very, very excited about that.
There we go. It's a busy time for Adam.
It is a busy time.
Writing about baseball every single day and then doing this guide. So Adam wrote the and we have every single conference, breakdowns team by team, AAC for Adam, ACC, the Sun Belt, as well as an article, which is a really actionable article, Michael, something you do. It's how to make your own power ratings model, and then the 2024 home field advantage values, which it is not just a flat 1.5 or 2 like the NFL we usually do, but there are a lot of variances that go on in that. One of the conferences, we talk ACC here, and what I like about the ACC is really, Florida State is viewed as the consensus number one, but after that, I mean, you could make a case for 4 or 5 different teams to knock right there on the door, be in that ACC title game. North Carolina, a team you've got your eye on that you are looking to attack kind of in an alt-win market way. Even though they lose Drake May at quarterback, the consensus is, all right, they've lost a lot now, especially you think about May being gone. What will the cupboard actually look like there on offense? But give us an idea inside that locker room there in Chapel Hill with what the Tar Heels still have there.
Yeah, so I think attacking alternate win total markets, both in the NFL and college football, can be really profitable. A lot of things can go right. A lot of things can go wrong. It's not an exact science for the sports books pricing these things. I mean, you can kind of assume, a team's going to be favored in X number of games and then kind of build off of that. But I actually have the Tar Heels favored in 10 games this season. And one of their underdog roles for me, the rivalry game against NC State coming up at the end of the year, they're only a half-point dog in that game for me. So, I think that this North Carolina team, yeah, they lose Drake May, but they bring in a very, very experienced college quarterback in Max Johnson, who's been at both Texas A&M and LSU. They had a 1,500-yard rusher last year in Omarion Hampton. He's going to be back this season as well. The seat is hot for Mack Brown. I will readily admit that. But again, something that we kind of focus on in our guide here that, you maybe won't find as much in other places. North Carolina brought in Jeff Collins to be the defensive coordinator, a guy who had a lot of success at Mississippi State, also at Florida. As a head coach, the results were mixed at Temple and Georgia Tech, but he's a very, very well-established defensive coordinator, and talent has never been a question in Chapel Hill. So I like their alt win total over 8.5 at plus 180. Obviously, I like over 7.5 at minus 115 as well. And I think that North Carolina is a team that could make some noise in this conference. I think a lot of people are kind of coronating Florida State already as the champion. I don't know that that's going to be the case. I'm not totally sold on DJU. I don't like what's going on at Clemson at all. I think Miami is a really good team, but as you go through the top teams, the top contenders in this conference, I think there are a lot of weaknesses, and I think North Carolina is a team that has an underappreciated ceiling right now in the betting markets, and I may look to take them 30-1 here to win the ACC.
And let me ask you, as you've gone through this guide and spent a lot of time going over all these teams, is there a team that you weren't high on that after going through it, you said, wait a minute, this team's good? Like, for me, it's Kentucky. Like, I've gone through the Southeast Conference. Kentucky's looks a lot better than some of the other teams, Florida being an example, certainly Mississippi State. What team that kind of jumped out to you?
Well, I will say North Carolina is certainly one of them. I mean, I didn't really expect to be that high in the Tar Heels, especially for the reason Ben mentioned. I mean, you lose a top five draft pick in Drake May, and you think, okay, well, how are they going to replace that? Well, they use some NIL money to replace that, and that's something I think is a really big positive here for a lot of these programs that are willing to do that, willing to go outside the program. Clemson, I'm talking to you. As far as some other teams that, you know, I wasn't all that high on that I kind of got high on, East Carolina is a team, and as Ben mentioned, I wrote the AAC, ACC, and the Sun Belt. East Carolina, a team out of the AAC, you know, this is typically a program that historically has been really, really good on offense. They've turned some guys into some NFL players. I think Keaton Mitchell, running back who was drafted a couple years ago, still has a chance to be a pretty good NFL player. But this is a team that, you know, last year just didn't have any help at the quarterback position. They were actually a top 50 defense in a lot of different metrics, but they just didn't have the guy at the most important position on the field. They got a couple of Power 5 transfers this year that I think those two guys will kind of fight for reps, fight for the job. The running game should be much better this season. And Mike Houston is a good head coach. He's a guy who, again, the seat is a little bit hot for him based on underperforming last season, but he's been a good head coach at every stop he's been at. He was pretty good over his first few seasons here with East Carolina. I think the Pirates are a team that, you know, could surprise a little bit. I don't think they win this conference by any means, but I do like them over their season win total here. I have them projected for about 6.5 wins. I think the Pirates get back to a bowl game this season.
Pirates, we're loving all things Carolina right now. Well, except for maybe South Carolina, but that's neither here nor there. That is one other win total you can check out in the guide for Adam Burke. As far as the power ratings go, you were talking about, you know, you have an article. It's really, really good. How to create your own power rating model here. I'm not sure where most people would have Alabama starting the year, but they cracked the top five for you. And it's one of those situations where with the new Power Four, right? Rich gets richer. You have three of the top five out of the SEC, that new look SEC, and then two, which the fascinating battle will be in the Big Ten, Ohio State versus Oregon this year.
Yeah, and that Ohio State-Oregon game on October 12th in Eugene, I think that's the one that decides the conference here for this season. But as you mentioned, you know, three teams from the SEC in my top five. You know, and I got five in the top eight with LSU and Ole Miss also in the mix as well. And Ole Miss is a team I'm excited to see. There's a lot of hype about the Rebels year in and year out, but a lot of people think this may be the year, based on what they did in the transfer portal, that they actually live up to those expectations. So, yeah, it's just a very basic set of what I call positional power ratings, but I think it is something that will help you kind of gauge, get a value for these teams and a value for some of these lines as we go throughout the course of the year.
Great stuff, man. We'll see you tomorrow. Bright and early. Excited. College Football Betting Guide release show. I know Michael's excited. You're going to read all 212 pages tomorrow morning, Michael.
I love it. Yeah, I do. I love it. I'm going to read the Mac five times, I can tell you that.
Let's do it. And don't forget to check out the Sun Belt for one Adam Burke's breakdown. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show, talk a little Why Not Wednesday with some long shot bets after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our new look website, VSiN.com, Adam Burke, in addition to handling all things College Football Betting Guide, he has a full breakdown on the Hall of Fame game for tomorrow. Steve Mackinnon also has more on the Hall of Fame game as far as all the historical trends as the preseason gets underway tomorrow. Michael Lombardi has his burning questions as well for all AFC teams. That's along with best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. Optimized for mobile, all at vsin.com.
Question. Maybe a stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
Why Not Wednesday? Let's do it, Michael. We got a lot of good topics for today. including the game that is about to start here in 15 minutes from the Olympics. We're both excited to watch as soon as we get off the air here. The U.S. Gets the rematch against South Sudan. If you missed that in the exhibition tune-up, USA is a 43.5-point favorite, down double digits at halftime. I certainly did not cover that game. They came back. They win by 1 point. South Sudan had a good look at the buzzer. South Sudan is 22-1 against Team USA. Now, that certainly is the definition of just a why not Wednesday for today. I'll say this, though. A lot of respected money coming in on South Sudan plus the points, which you can get plus 30 right now. And I actually don't think that's a bad bet whatsoever. South Sudan clearly is not what the expectations were when they had that exhibition against the USA.
Well, the one thing is when you get surprised by a team and survive, the next time you play them, you're not surprised. So I fully expect Team USA to have a complete concentration to play this game. And look, it's hard for great teams to stay great all the time when they know they're 40-point favorites against another team. So the second time you play them, they'll take this a lot more seriously. I agree with you. Perhaps take the points, because South Sudan also has confidence that they can play with these guys. So I think, to me, the line would be better. But for to think South Sudan's going to beat our team, no. You couldn't get me to say why not on that.
I know. Well, and it's part of it, too, is like purely from a betting numbers perspective. The 43.5, like, let's just be real, Michael. That was just a guess. You know, the originators of which there are very few on Olympic exhibition basketball, they're just taking their best stab at it. You can't risk putting it too low because you know you're going to get an influx of likely homeristic USA money. But to say, oh, well, now they reduced it 14, 15 points means value's on USA, that is a total farce. To me, value's still on South Sudan. Not that they're going to win the game. They won't. But to at least keep it within 30, that's the way I would bet that thing for the game starting here in about 15 minutes there. Prime time in France at the Olympics as the group stage rolls on. All right, why not Wednesday? We got a lot of long shots here as far as some season-long futures. We broke down the Bears today. Michael, Caleb Williams, 40-plus passing touchdowns in the regular season at 16-1. I'll take a pass on that. How about you?
You're not getting me to say why not on that. 40, look, I'm not sure Ryan Poles, the general manager of the Chicago Bears, does he look at the weather reports in Chicago?
Yeah.
Does he realize it's called the Windy City? Like, you know, if you're going to win in Chicago and you're playing 9 games or 8 games there, with 5 of them are going to be wind, rain, snow, sleet, hail, whatever you want to, like, you got to have a big physical team that can pound it. I mean, that's what football's about. Football, it does take weather into play. And we have entered into the Madden world where we all just want to play it on our computers and it's perfect conditions. But look, the Caleb Williams won't throw 40 touchdown passes, I don't think, in his career. He shouldn't. He needs to hand the ball off. He needs to make plays. 40, if you're playing 17 games, you've got to average over 2 a game.
I'm with you. Get that out of here. You know what? I could potentially get behind this. And we talked when we broke down the Texans earlier, Michael. How will the offense look? Will be a little bit more multidimensional, a little more balanced for Bobby Slowick as an OC. There's a path where it's not balanced, and you have C.J. Stroud playing indoors, and you could throw the football a lot for him to reach 5,000 pass yards. That is plus 750. Now, I mean, the issue is I'd want double digits on that, but if you're getting me into the why not mode, I can see a world in which Stroud gets there, where Slowick to revert back to some of the tendencies of last year, and you just see a whole lot of deep bombs from Stroud this year.
I think they bluffed everybody with having a hand that thought they could run the ball. They couldn't run the ball. I think the bluff's off. I think now people are going to approach Houston as a passing team, not a running team. And all those play action stuff, which we see the adjustments that teams made in the second half against them. Remember, this is a team that struggled in the first and third quarters. They really improved in the second and fourth. I don't see Stroud. I know Nico Collins is good. The line moved when they signed Diggs, which I don't understand why that moved the line from 8.5 to 9.5 on the win total. But I don't see them. If they're going to win the South, he can't throw for 5,000 yards.
And look, even in a situation last year where he was throwing a lot, 41.08 in 2023 for Stroud. I mean, that's why I would need double digits to actually want to pull the trigger on that bet. Here's another really interesting one staying in that division, Michael, with quarterbacks. Anthony Richardson, in his first 3 starts, 4 rushing touchdowns last year, then the injury early on in week number 4. to reach 12 rushing touchdowns. It's plus 550. You're really banking in, though, a reliance and a trust in his ability to stay on the field, and that's what this really comes down to me.
Well, look, I think to me, you know, one of the things we've seen is Josh Allen's, I think that there were 19 rushing touchdowns in Buffalo last year. Josh Allen had 15 of them. When you get to the red zone and you become a six-back offense or a six-point offense like the Colts will do, dealing with the quarterback down there is a problem. Because this, you know, you've got to defend the run. You've got to defend the run option pass. I do think, you know, plus 12 touchdowns is realistic. I could say why not to this. But I think at plus 550, it doesn't seem to be a good enough price to invest in.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, price it's not all that great, especially if you think about, you know, you can just bet this, you know, anytime touchdown throughout the regular season. If you're betting any, if you bet anytime touchdown in all 17 games for Richardson, the payout, let's say you win 11 and lose 6, the payout's going to be much, much greater than winning, you know, about 5.5 units on a single bet if you're doing it that way. That's how I would approach that. And that would qualify for me. I mean, it is in the why not category. I am a believer that Richardson will use him properly. He'll be staying healthy here in 2024. Continuing here, why not Wednesday to wrap up the show. This one I saw and I just laughed at. Pittsburgh Steelers to win 12 plus games in the regular season. 8-1. No thank you on that one.
Yeah, no, I have great respect for Mike, and I think winning 10 games last year was a miracle, but to get to 12, you know, we're already hearing that Justin Fields is edging into Russell Wilson's reps. Now, we know what Fields is going to look like once he becomes, if he starts there, what that offense will look like. For me, I 10 would be a tremendous season. I'm certainly not going to 12.
Like, if you told me, you know, because remember, week one, Pittsburgh plays Atlanta. That's close to a pick 'em the expectations are pretty, power ratings pretty similar on those two teams. Pittsburgh has the toughest strength of schedule in the league. Atlanta has the easiest, plays in probably the weakest division in the league. If you told me 12 plus wins for Atlanta at similar odds, I would probably say why not, just because even though I don't believe in them, the schedule is to the point where I could see a world in which that happens. I don't see it in any way with Pittsburgh with the gauntlet they have to face, even if they do exceed expectations as far as the product on the field here for 2024. A few more for us to get to here. We'll go to the AFC North. Ja'Marr Chase still waiting his extension to record a 200 plus receiving yard game at any point is plus 370 this year. Is that enticing enough for you, Michael, on those odds?
You know, I think, yeah, I think you got to certainly, Ja'Marr Chase can go off at any moment. One slant for a touchdown, two slants, and he's over. I would make that to that at plus 370. It's a good number. I would take that bet. I would make that one.
Because again, you're not talking every game. It's just one time for Chase. Especially, you assume at a certain point, Burrow will be fully healthy, despite the early negative reports we've seen in training camp. All right, Ravens to score one or more rushing touchdown in every regular season game. Now, 10-1 makes, that's a lot of sense. That was the other one I looked at, and I would say, yeah, why not? That's a team that has been predicated on, you talk about the red zone productivity, Michael, on running the ball into the end zone. I could very well see that happening.
I think so. I mean, I would definitely play that at 10-1 because I think that's who they are. They get down there, you know, they're going to throw it. But he's also has the ability to make plays with his feet. Again, it's a six-back offense when he gets down there because of his movement. So, yeah, rushing TDs would count here for me. I would bet that.
26 rushing touchdowns last year to 27 passing touchdowns. Most teams do not have that even of a split. I do like that for Baltimore. Here's one that will be in the account. If you shop this, you can find it at circa 11-1. The Giants to have the fewest wins in the NFL. This is, of all these, my favorite here. This is more than why not. This is I am in on fading the Giants to the extreme in 2024, Michael.
Yeah, and this is without counting any injuries, right? This is with the Giants team on paper, even as much as they celebrated with their draft and all the success they had. I mean, look, you watch that Giants Hard Knocks, you think this is a team competing for the Super Bowl. And yes, I would agree with a why not here.
All right, we found some good ones on Why Not Wednesday. There will be more for us. There's a couple of dual forecast divisional stuff we're going to do next week that I've kind of circled already, so I'm already looking forward to the Why Not Wednesday edition for next week. Michael, great to be with you as always. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks,
excited
Dan.
For the first day of August. Preseason football gets underway tomorrow, and of course the college football betting guide. Stay tuned for all of that coverage here coming up. On the other side on VSiN, it is Sharp Money as the day rolls on here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.